It's always our delight to connect you with our team of technicians here. Mr. Gary Baker, who has been involved in information technology for decades now.
I'm not that old.
Come on.
Yes, I am, but it's radio, so they can't tell.
I don't want you to ever say that again. Don't include decades, how long we've been on this
all
show.
All right. Yeah, we're moving towards 20 years, my goodness. In any case, Eddie Rudell is here as well. Ed has worked tirelessly in technology, a lot of experience.
End-user technology. You know, I think that's a good way of putting it, because I do desktop
like
support and basically end-user, what the person gets a hold of, and I'm the guy that has to try to figure out to make it work for him.
Yep. And
what do you mean you bought a new mouse? What was wrong with the old mouse?
So if you want to get in touch with these folks, 800-859-0957 is the number to do that. And by the way, I might say at the beginning of the program here, this is the last of three programs in which you'll be able to dial directly to us and ask those questions. You can still do it through email by going to our homepage, internetadvisor.net, and clicking on the Contact Us button. During the week, we'll still get those emails with your questions. But right now, you have a unique opportunity to call 800-859-0957, and we will be able to tackle your problem right off the bat. So let's dive into this and talk with Victoria from Toledo, Ohio. And Victoria, I hope you have drinking water this weekend.
Oh, yes.
Thank heavens.
Yeah, lots of reasons to be phobic about things on that front, too.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, we've been talking this last hour about all sorts of security problems. And
the water goes out in that area from the algae plumes over there and the toxins the algae release. You can't even filter the stuff.
I know. Can't even
it
boil
makes
it.
Me very happy. I have a 60-foot straw in my backyard.
It goes way down underground with all that filtering goes on. Well, let's talk to you about your concerns about phones.
Well, I wonder if I'm being too phobic or more than you, but I wonder, because I'm not as knowledgeable, of course. Well, one thing I just thought of, too, online banking, I don't do online.
Mm-hmm.
I'm comfortable with a computer for my job.
Sure.
But wouldn't that be more vulnerable to when the hacking occurs, like the Russian stuff?
I don't know myself. My thought is that the security of the banks, and it was said this last hour in many ways, the banks either are very good at this or are very poor. If they're very good at it because they know what's at risk, my thoughts are they probably have done a lot. I bank with Bank of America, for instance, and I'm pretty sure they got some really good security measures in there. But what are your thoughts, Ed? I know some people won't bank online, period. They don't care.
Right. I think you need to change your passwords frequently. I mean, how many times have you been issued a credit card from your bank for no reason, and you know that when you're issued a new card that there's been an infiltration? Mm-hmm. You know, because, I mean, there's been a
good
couple
point.
Times
just
where
happened
I
to me recently.
Have, yep. There's been a time or two where I've had to call the bank and said there's been a transaction on there, or I've looked at the bill and saw a transaction. But there's also been times where nothing's happened for a year or two, and then I'm inside of 2 years, I'm issued two cards. Well, that means more than likely they've noted some type of security.
Or they suspected that something might have happened where you could have been hit.
And that's good. They're
absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, but then would that not have happened if you did not do online banking?
Well, I was just talking about the credit card. So online banking, a lot of people do that. I'm just suggesting you change your passwords frequently and you have good antivirus software on your computer. Definitely do not run a computer that's running Windows XP if you're going to be running online banking, because that's what, how long has Windows XP been, is no longer supported, although most antivirus providers said that they're going to continue providing antivirus for another 9 more months or so. But I would get off that system. It's insecure. If you're going to do any type of online banking. So make sure you have a good system.
So, Victoria, what system are you working with? What's your operating system on your computer? XP, Vista,
Vista.
Vista, okay. Yeah. Okay, so as Eddie said, XP is the most vulnerable. Gary, some thoughts on this?
I do online banking and have for a number of years. It's really convenient. Yes, I'm concerned about it, like we all should be, right? And I'm speaking only for myself here at this point, but we all should be, concerned about it. So I make sure that I check regularly what my balances, and if anybody has taken anything out of it, I will know right away. Banks primarily hold people harmless if that were to happen. But I think we're all moving in this direction, and it's going to continue to move in this direction. But we all have to be vigilant in everything we do around anything that needs to have better security.
Your initial question...
And I have a very good password.
Yeah. Your initial question was about phones, though, right, Victoria?
Yeah, and I wonder, like, I know supposedly they're going to be ended in 5 or so years, but is it not the case that the wall phone allows you more privacy than the cordless phone?
Good question. Not just a cordless phone. You're talking about
a cell phone.
A cell phone. You mean like one where it's voice over internet? Like a Vonage or something
like that? And also like versus having the phone, the cheaper versions where you get it through your router.
Plain old pots. Plain old telephone systems.
Well, plain old pots are insecure up to the point where they get to the switching station, at which point then they're mixed with a bunch of others and they're compressed and encrypted. So anyone could jump on a telephone line and listen to your over-the-air conversations
with a
plain old telephone line. They could tap into it. Right. But if you have a home router provided by your internet service provider, it's encrypted at your house, from your house. So it's actually more secure.
All right, Victoria, we'll be back and talk a little bit more about this after the break. Lots of room for you here this afternoon on the Internet Advisor Live. You can call us with your questions about your computer, about the internet connection, whatever you'd like to do. And we have the time and we have the experts in here to answer your questions. Again, at 800-859-0957. And Irv out there in Toledo will be with you in just a moment to help you with your Windows 7 question. Speaking about Windows, we had a happy customer. Tom got back in touch with us, guys. I thought it would be kind of interesting to talk about this because when he first got in touch with us, he was just so fed up with Windows 8, he was saying, that's it. As a matter of fact, he capitalized the word hate. They hate Windows 8, and I must agree with them. I'm no longer able to help them with issues. And, he was talking about the other people in his house.
Right.
So we gave him some ideas and matter of fact, Eddie, in particular, he told him about the great resources there are online with videos to help you understand.
Correct. Microsoft provides some great tutorials, and I actually
YouTube.
Use YouTube. And, that first week use of Windows 8, what am I supposed to do?
So he sent it back this week. He had an email back to us, said, thank you for addressing my questions on the show, encouraged by your other caller, the 76-year-old farmer on the combine who loved Windows 8. Ben, that's you.
That was Ben.
Yep. Ben Carpenter. I invested a significant amount of time this past week to figure out how to set up and use Windows 8. I decided at some point in the future my computer at work will also be equipped with Windows 8, and I better be able to function with it. My situation has improved, and I believe I can now help my wife and mom with their computer issues. He said, I'm still frustrated at times with quirks, and I agree with him, by the way. There are some times it makes me just crazy, but I'm learning and progressing, and personally, I believe that every new software should be more user-friendly, intuitive, and evolutionary improvement built on a previous version. And I think that was a big thing about Windows 8. It was such a change that people had a hard time getting their heads around it.
When you think about it, there was even more of a change when we all went to tablets, right, to the iPad.
Yep.
However, we expected that to be different, so we said, oh, it's going to be different, I'm going to learn
because
it.
Because the form factor was different.
Right?
Good
so point. When you look at Windows 8, because it looks like a computer, we don't expect it to be different, so we don't have the same attitude when we go about learning.
Right. And I have to say that Microsoft is also kind of going back, stepping back and helping people with, like, for instance, this Windows version 8.1 of Windows is an excellent one, an excellent way to, it really brings a lot of things back, a start menu and so many, many, many other things. Okay, let's go to Irv, who's waiting for us from Toledo. Hey, Irv, how you doing? Welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Well, I'm doing the best I can. I'm visually impaired, gentlemen,
okay.
And I've just bought a new system, a Hewlett-Packard Pavilion desktop with Windows 7 on it.
Okay.
And, oh boy, am I having fun getting used to Windows 7. My old system was an XP.
It's interesting hearing you say that from all the people we have complaining about Windows 8. So it's a big change for you, right?
Now, what a difference. I've got 8. I've got a disk with full version of 8, and I'm afraid to put it in. But what I've got going on is an icon down in my tool tray that says Network Tool or Network 2.
Okay.
And underneath of that, it says Internet Access. Now, do I want to open that or no?
Well, that's more than likely. It's a notification that your Network 2 adapter has Internet Access.
Okay.
Otherwise, it would say no access or no Internet. So what happened, laptops and desktops usually come with multiple network adapters.
That's right.
Laptops, and we're familiar with this because we have laptops. So we'll have a Network 1, and we'll also have a wireless network adapter.
Mm-hmm.
And the wireless network adapter will say Internet Access next to it. And if we hovered our mouse over the one that might be the standard network adapter, it would say no access, I believe is what it says.
Right. Well, I am on a ISP hard cable.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that from their modem that I can turn on the wireless.
Right,
modem.
But this message is on your laptop. So more than likely what's...
I'm
your desktop. On your computer. So as Gary was speculating, Gary, why don't you tell him what you think that was?
So I believe that when you first connected, it said network.
Right.
And then for whatever reason that became corrupted, you decided not to use it, so you established a second network, and this is just to distinguish between the first one and the second one. If you still had the first one there, you could go back and forth between network and network two.
And when Gary
and
says
you, yeah,
he means Windows,
right,
or you,
right.
Or some action you performed.
Yeah, you could have done it on purpose, and it could have happened to you because of something that happened within the system.
Now, I've seen this as someone that works on computers. Sometimes, for whatever reason, a network, the networking stops working. A good way that I've found to reload all of Windows network drivers is to go into the Windows Device Manager, and you could do this in Windows XP, Windows Vista, and Windows 7. And then you tell Windows to remove these network devices, and you do them one at a time. When the computer reboots, it rediscovers all the networks,
mm-hmm.
adapters,
so
wireless and wired. Let me finish.
Okay.
And then it reloads the drivers for those and reloads networking, TCP/IP, and all your other protocols. So, but when it discovers your network adapter, it may identify it as Network 2.
Yeah,
that's where I'm going.
That leads directly into my the second part of my question.
Oh, good.
Is it possible I could have a business? I mean, I bought this used, this system.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible it could have been a business system? And it says it's home premium, Windows 7.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible someone was using it for a business?
Oh, it's certainly possible.
Yeah, sure.
You know, small business.
I mean, I had some people here from the Great Sight Center of Toledo, Ohio,
mm-hmm.
That helped me because I'm visually impaired.
Sure.
And when they went into it, they found that the previous owner... was a young lady name of such and such,
mm-hmm.
and but that's all they could find. Other than it is Windows Home Premium, Windows 7.
Okay, so for some reason you have inherited a system that still had a lot of user information. It wasn't completely erased. So what I had speculated on is that at some point in the past, someone deleted or removed your network adapter so that Windows could reload all the software for that network adapter, and when it boot came back up, it came up as Network 2.
It identified itself as Network 2.
So on your taskbar, that's why it's showing up as Network 2. You really only have one network adapter. So what it really means is Network Adapter 2. But in essence, it's really Network Adapter 1, and it has Internet access.
Well, then that is not just a standard part of Windows 7.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It does not come with all versions of Windows 7. It is something that I can remove.
No, do not remove that. That is just a notification bar that's telling you have Internet access.
Well, if you remove it and now you want to reestablish a network network connection, it'll come up Network 3.
Yes.
And, oh, great.
Yeah, but
right?
I
have, I think, Network 3 or Network 4 on mine right now.
Irv, a rose by any other name would smell the same. Have you ever heard that?
You know, but all that does is distinguish it from the first time you've established an Internet connection. as long as you don't...
It just means basically
You can keep using two,
right.
But if you ever take two down, the next one will be three.
He'll have a difficult time, though, re-enabling. He may have a difficult time.
Yeah,
Windows 7 has already got more bells and whistles on it than I'll ever need. Mm-hmm. And Network 3, that's all I need.
Well, so all that means is that it's the third time you've gone ahead and established that whole network.
In other words, don't be blown away by this whole thing. We've taken a little time to explain this for you because of other people who may find themselves in the same situation, which is why we take the time to do this kind of thing, because it applies to other people as well.
And if you were to, if you did not have a network on your device,
right. You
could take out the word two, or to the number of two, and it'll just be network. So that's your label. That's the
name of the network.
Yep.
Yeah, and realize that.
But if you did have another network connection, and now you want to take network two and take out the two, now you've got a conflict. So that's bad.
So out of curiosity,
don't be afraid of it at all. Go ahead and use it.
Okay. We don't have time to answer.
All right. Hey, Herb, thank you so much, Herb. We've taken more time than usual on this, but that's because we thought that there's a lot of answers that we got in there. So thank you very much. Hey, phone lines are open for you at 800-859-0957. If you got a problem and you don't call us to get some answers, shame on you. Remember, the only dumb question is the one you don't ask. 800-859-0957.
To the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
As some of you have learned, and I hope more of you before our show ends here, Annie Nichols is in today. Annie, good to have you there answering the phones.
You can hear her smile.
That's right.
When you call.
Rich Luzinski also in-house. By the way, next week, folks, we're going to be having the folks from Pinkerton in. We're going to be talking about them having their new office in Ann Arbor, and they've gone from being just private eyes and security firm to being security now of digital goods as well. Mm-hmm. Kind of fascinating. They've moved to Ann Arbor. They think it's the place to be for them. That's Pinkerton. People who really gave private eye, that whole notion, because of their symbol, private eye, applied across the board to all those who were doing protection kind of work. Okay, the phone number again, 800-859-0957. Let's go to Timothy in Southfield. Timothy, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you?
Thank you. Yeah, I've just had this problem crop up on my computer, I guess this last week. I have a Windows 7 computer that I built myself. It's an AMD processor. Mm-hmm. And it's about 2 years old. And I've got a wireless Microsoft keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, the control key, like if I'm going to do control C for copy or control V for paste and stuff like that, mm-hmm. doesn't activate. And sometimes it'll backspace once, but I can't make it backspace a whole bunch of times in a row by holding it down.
Hmm.
And sometimes even the shift key, if I'm trying to type a number of capital letters in a row, the shift key won't work every time.
Are you left-handed or right-handed?
I'm right-handed.
Okay, because there's another shift on the other side of the keyboard and another control key. And I've run into this, too, when I'm running across failing keyboards, is have you tried to see if the other control key works?
It doesn't work any better. I already tried that.
Okay, perfect. That means what we're probably dealing with is an electronic issue, failing of the device, rather than a mechanical.
Uh-huh. Now, the keyboard is older than the computer.
Yeah.
Okay. And you said it's wireless?
Yes.
Okay. The number of things I would guess, but I mean, I think I would immediately, I'd say it's the wireless keyboard.
Well, first thing I would think of is batteries, of course.
Okay.
And then...
Not that. I just replaced that. That was the first thing I did.
Okay. Yeah. And have you got like a USB...
That's good.
Is it the USB nub that you plug into the back of your computer, or is it the Microsoft tether with like a docking station?
Well, it is. There's the receiver which sits on my desk, and then it's got a split cable. It's got a USB port, and then it's got that purple round
thing to plug into
because it's supposed to be made for a mouse and a keyboard. I'm not using the mouse, but I unplugged that to see if that would make a difference, and now it's just running on just the USB port, and it's no different.
Yeah. The only thing I could think of is, A, trying in another computer, You know, just unplug it and plug it into a laptop and see if it works. And I've already suggested the other, checking the mechanics of the keyboard by using the other shift and control keys. And you've already tried that too. It sounds like your keyboard's going.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, really.
They're fairly cheaply made. Right.
Yeah.
And the good thing is they're cheap to buy a new one.
They are. Yeah.
And it'll be better. I mean, right
it
now
it will be better.
Yeah. Right now you're using a Microsoft proprietary. You know, it uses 2.4 gigahertz, but it's a proprietary RF signal, and that's unique to it and that Microsoft used. It's not using Bluetooth. It's not using Wi-Fi.
Oh, yeah, although it uses the same standard.
Yeah, although it's using the spectrum that's available for home use, it's using a spectrum that steps on everyone else's Wi-Fi. So this is an opportunity for you to get rid of that device and maybe use it and purchase something that's true Bluetooth that won't step over the frequencies of the wireless technology that's been developed now.
Kind of an older first generation.
It's like the cordless phones that we all had in their house.
So I don't have to buy a new keyboard. I get to.
I love the way you put that.
Oh, yes.
Is that how you're going to explain the expense to your wife?
Yeah, I was just going to say, would you like a note to your wife? We can write that note for you.
Are there any brands in particular that you recommend that are not the top end? I don't like to spend more than I have to, obviously, if I rebuild my own.
Oh, boy.
I'm guessing we're all going to say the same one. But
I was going to say, yeah, you're going to Logitech.
Logitech.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, you take your, 30 or 90 day in-store warranty, you know, how often do you want to go back when the thing starts failing inside of 30 or 90 days? Logitech has a great reputation. They're mid or top range.
But most of them today are going to be pretty good.
I mean, if I go to Micro Center, I've taken the chance on some wireless keyboards, and I've done okay. They seem to work okay.
Yep.
You know, but it's hit or miss.
But well, what you said before, Ed, in this particular case is that you're also getting the benefit of the newer Bluetooth technology.
That's right. For any of the keyboards you buy today are going to be better than what he has.
Okay,
well,
Tim.
Well, Logitech's always been my default, so thank you. I will go get one.
Okay. All right, sir. Thank you. Hey, just quickly, a quick question for you, Tim. What do you use for your passwords? We're going to take a little survey here.
Yep.
How do you keep your passwords?
I use really, really difficult passwords, except on the I don't care about them websites.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Very good.
I've created them myself, except I keep them stored on a doc file on my computer, and I have a difficult password to get into my computer. But then I just started this new thing, Dashlane. I'm trying that out.
Dashlane? I don't think I've heard of it.
Yeah,
I saw it advertised.
I've heard good things about it.
Okay.
So far, it seems to be doing okay for me. It'll create my own passwords for me, and it offers to log me in, and it does log me into some things. So it may work good, but I just sort of, like I said, I keep a big doc file with probably 60 or 70 really complex passwords on it.
Now, do you take and encrypt that doc file? Because you can do that as well, just like Excel.
I'm not that bright.
So actually, it's just a pull-down menu, and it says encrypt.
I just scotch tape a piece of paper on the wall where anybody can read it. No, I don't do that.
But they had to break into your house, and you have good deadbolts.
That I got. But no, I keep it in my computer, which I don't leave on when I'm not in the house. But
Gotcha.
But no, I don't encrypt. I haven't thought about that, but that's an interesting idea.
So it's actually fairly easy to do. So, and I know a lot of people that do that with Excel spreadsheets, and they'll encrypt them and then have a very complicated password to get into the Excel spreadsheet.
You know, and that's one of the things that work, people will come up to me and say, I have this Excel spreadsheet from 2003, and I don't remember the password to get into it. Oh. And I'm like,
good luck.
Good luck.
There's no way in.
Any crackers out there that'll bust
there's
that.
No way.
Nope, you're...
Right.
Right. Yeah, so
Tim.
Whatever you do, if you do that, remember that password.
All right, Tim, thanks a million for calling. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I love listening to you guys.
All right, appreciate it so much. Okay, folks, hey, if you get a question out there, don't forget, we got about 20 minutes left, a little less than that. 800-859-0957. Come on in. Put down a lemonade and give us a call. Paul from Pontiac, how may we help you on the Internet Advisor?
Well, I recently got a new laptop.
Congratulations.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Touch screen running 8.1.
Good.
And I got fingerprints all over the screen. How do you get those off?
You know what's worse is my touchscreen. I love it, but my office computer has fingerprints on it too because I wanted to touch that screen.
I know, I do the same thing. Yeah, exactly.
I get frustrated. But anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah,
so,
well, it's a pain, but was wondering, should I be concerned about making a system restore disk?
Very good question.
Mr. Ed.
Yep. Oh, yeah, definitely. That's the first thing I do. When I first power on a computer, you know what I do? Well, first thing I do is, yes, create the restoration disk. And I have to find out, I'm not sure about this, but I believe with Windows 8.1, it allows you to create a restoration USB drive. So it'll let you create not only a system recovery, Microsoft system recovery disk or on a flash drive, but they're making flash drives so large now that you can actually put them on a USB drive.
Well, and my Surface Pro,
yeah, you don't have it.
That's the only thing I can do is put a USB drive in it.
So. That's interesting. Yeah,
when I was looking for laptops, it was actually a little difficult to find one with a disk drive.
Yeah, you got to buy externals today. And just connect it via USB.
So. Yeah, I wonder how much longer that's going to be around. So,
how do you go about doing that?
Well, who's the manufacturer of your laptop?
It's an Asus.
Usually, there's a. I don't know specifically about Asus, but if it was an HP or a Dell, and I'm assuming it's the same thing with Asus. Someone told me it's pronounced like Pegasus, so it's Asus. You should have a program group there called for system recovery somewhere. Now, is yours running Windows 8?
Yes,
Windows 8.1. By the way, I'm on Windows 8.1 right now. And what I did, by the way, and this is for anybody else out there, if you want to find something about your system, simply go either with your finger into the right-hand corner or take your mouse, if you're running a mouse. I just happen to have one with me right now that's on a mouse. Go to the right-hand corner and bring up the search. Okay, mm-hmm. And then I tell you what, we're going to put you on hold, and I want to tell you about this because it's a great way of finding things on your Windows 8 machine.
Right. So, and there's two things basically. You got the manufacturer's system restoration, but Windows 8 also provides an integrated restoration, and that's what we're going to talk
about. That's exactly it. We're going to
come back
and talk about that. And we got some time for your call as well at 800-859-0957.
Kids have the craziest ideas about food. Where do they get this stuff? Like eating Brussels sprouts helps you hit home runs. And eating carrots gives you X-ray vision. It's nuts. And I honestly have no idea where my daughter got this notion that broccoli is the official food of professional ballerinas. Kids, the only reason my 4-year-old loves cantaloupe is because he's convinced it comes from the moon.
Small step for man, lots of potassium for mankind.
And the other day when my oldest came up to me and said, Mom, will eating peas and carrots really help me pull off a fakie frontside ollie with a twist? I look him in the eye and say, it can't hurt, honey. It can't hurt.
Moms everywhere are finding creative ways to help their kids eat 5 servings of fruit and vegetables a day. Get ideas, get involved, get going at letsmove.gov. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
Is the Internet Advisor. We're taking your calls at 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0957. Now, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Riddell.
It's been a pleasure being with you today. And by the way, if you've enjoyed our show today and you'd like to hear the podcast of the program, if you missed some part of it, or would like to listen again to what Richard Steenen had to say about the Black Hat conference he was at and some of the things that he's looking at as concerns in the world of security on the Internet. Fascinating conversation.
Yeah, I'm so glad he blew the wind out of the sails of that $1.2
billion. Oh, yeah.
And that just seems such an outrageous number.
Yep. And the article he gave as well was a great one for putting it apart very carefully and giving an explanation for why they said that's just a lot of nonsense. But anyway, if you'd like to hear our podcast, you simply wait till Sunday night, and I'll post that up there for you on our homepage at internetadvisor.net. You can also subscribe to it on iTunes. Okay, 800-859-0957. We do have time for another couple of calls, but we want to go back to Paul. Paul, thank you very much for calling us. And you asked about, you've got a new computer with Windows 8.1 on it, and you want to know how to create a restoration disk. And both Gary and I are on the Surface Pro 2. So we have that machine in front of us, and I'm going to describe some of the things there. But did you have a further question you were going to ask, Paul?
There's one general annoyance on my mind.
Okay, let's get back to that then. What I wanted to say was that one of the first things you can do, and this is for just about anything you have a question about on your computer with Windows, it's really a nice function. And that is that you simply go to that right corner, if you've got a mouse, and you pop up the place where you've got the little
charm search,
you know, and it says search at the top of the little magnifying glass. You can go there, and or you can go to the desktop and just start typing anywhere you want on the homepage. And the point is that will bring up a search right away. And in that search, then, you can ask, for instance, create a recovery disk or anything you want. And it'll start with things that are on your computer and lead you to those, and then also take you onto the internet, for instance, to find answers as they're well there.
Well, one thing I noticed, though, with Windows 8, and I did not bring my Windows 8 system to the studio today. I brought my Windows 7 laptop, and I was searching for this identical thing. When I typed in system recovery disk or recovery, the search did not find it in Windows 8.
No.
You're kidding. Didn't find it.
No. You have to actually be very specific with Windows 8. It went to Bing, and I'm like, I know there's an application on here. So as Foster was going to say, have to actually use the correct terms. Recovery drive?
Create recovery drive.
Or just recovery drive and system image.
Oh, what it comes up with, for instance, there's a couple of very – one of the things is the simplest thing to do is that you go and you press the Windows key. You know which one that is, right, Paul?
Sure.
And then W. And that comes up then with a place where you can simply type in create recovery drive. And then you click on the result, and then you follow the on-screen instructions to create a backup of your recovery partition on a thumb drive. Which the recovery partition is, there's a place on the drive on every one of these Windows 8.1 machines that has, it stores a little space there that you can't get at. You can't store anything in it. You can't access it normally. But that's where it has all the building blocks necessary to rebuild your computer should something happen. Okay? And that's what you create your recovery disk from. And so all the information about doing that is right there. And then you can...
It's a bootable flash drive usually, right? So you can make a CD or a bootable flash drive. I believe 2 gigs is about... if you had a 2 gigabyte flash drive, that's more than adequate. And for making the recovery drive.
Now, do you have an optical drive on your? Pardon, excuse me, just a second, Paul. On your computer, do you have an optical drive? You know, for playing DVDs.
I do.
You do. Okay. Well, then you could burn it onto there, or what's even simpler is just to put it onto a USB.
Right.
And it will be just fine. Then you've got it and you got it set. And that's your recovery drive.
And this is what I did with mine. I created a USB flash drive, a 2 gigabyte. And you can buy them for $2 or $3 at Micro Center. I have a bunch of them lying around the house. And the other thing is, then I created my system image, and then I taped the flash drive to the package where I put the system image, which was on an external drive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I did not create DVDs.
What's the difference between the system image and the recovery drive?
The system image is a clone of your Windows 8. So that's like your restoration CDs that you were talking about.
But it has everything that you have on the PC right now.
Right then and there, yes.
Right.
So you can either burn it to an external, you can burn it to your CD, or you can burn it to an external drive. You know, not burn it. I'm sorry. You can copy it to an external hard drive, USB
so
flash
Paul,
drive.
If I'm right, Eddie, correct me on this. Then the recovery drive will simply put back the bare bones, the basics of Windows 8.1 onto your computer.
Recovery drive, I believe, provides a small Windows graphical environment that lets you run diagnostics and repair lets you reinstall Windows, lets you refresh it to factory settings. If the if your hard drive hasn't failed completely, as Foster said, there's a hidden partition on there.
Yeah.
And then you can restore. And Windows allows you the ability to restore.
And Paul's got a fairly new machine, right, Paul? This is a new machine for you, right?
Yes.
Okay. So then the system image that you're talking about, Ed, that is the actual picture of the entire contents of his drive as it is right now.
Yeah, and that's the one you...
pictures and programs and documents?
And that's the one you put in Grandma's house. As so, Gary does, yeah.
Yep.
So you know that the difference between the two then? Do you see, Paul?
Yep.
Yeah, you actually need both of those. You need the USB flash drive, 2 gigabyte, to create the restoration, right? A recovery, the bootable recovery drive. And then you need your system images as well. So if you search for those two terms, or you can go into Microsoft's website or use Bing and type in Windows 8 system recovery and a system image.
And by the way, the first when I typed in that create recovery disk, the first place that the search took me to was the Microsoft community. Okay, Paul? So for anybody else out there, this is why I want to take a little bit of time explaining what search does in Windows 8. It's different from what it did before.
Yeah, and it can be confusing a little bit.
Right.
It's so comprehensive, I think.
Well, Microsoft could have done a much better job on the restoration of these restoration disks on here. They changed the terminology on us once again. They didn't make it easy to find it in a search. But at least you can go watch videos on it.
Now, Paul, I'm just curious. Have you had another question?
So I'm thinking this is why people don't like to get new computers.
Yeah, there's a yes, and particularly one with Windows 8.1. You're right.
It's just we're upgrading, the operating system.
Technology is changing so quickly, as you observed yourself.
Yeah, and you've got to make all this stuff that you can't just open up out of the box and start using.
Oh, you can.
Keep running.
You could certainly do that. Once you put your data on there, create your system image.
I'm going to go back to something this email that we got from Tom. Who had the problems. He was so fed up with the process, he was going to give it up and go back to Windows 7. And we just encouraged him to keep on trying, like you are. And he said, I've updated to Windows 8.1. And he said that he's seeing it as beneficial, especially for his mom, because it's so simple. And he thanked us for helping him to kind of hang in there and keep on trying.
It's actually a lot more simple for people that don't know Windows 7.
Yes.
Right? If you just want to, if you aren't encumbered by what you want it to be or think it should be, and just to learn it, it's actually not too bad to learn.
Paul, what was your background with computers before this?
I went from an XP system.
Okay. And what did you use it for? Did you use it just at home for email and things like that?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit of Excel.
Yeah, and I think that's, for somebody coming from XP to Windows 8.1, that's a big jump. But the good news, again, is there is a ton of video out there on YouTube. And if you go to Microsoft, they have a lot of great instructionals there as well. So, Paul, thanks so much for sticking with us here, because I hope that we've been able to help a lot of other people as well. Ed and Gary, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
And folks have a great weekend. Don't forget that if you still have questions, you can get them through to us. And you folks who are listening to us on our affiliates, we love to take questions from you as well. Just simply go to internetadvisor.net to the Contact Us button on there, and then put in your email address and your question, and we'll get back to you just as quick as we can. Thanks again for another great week here on the Internet Advisor. We come back next week. We'll be talking about the people who brought us Private Eyes, Pinkerton, moving to Ann Arbor.